The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good evening. Welcome to the National Intel Report. I'm your guest host, Chris Hinckley, sitting in for John's dad, Miller. This day after Christmas, Tuesday, December 26, 2017. And the signs of the times are everywhere. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, 41 million Americans living in poverty these days. And what was the story I saw before Christmas? There was a news article about what you can do with all of that stuff that you get. So, you know, hopefully we're more sensitive than that these days as Americans. Hopefully we're getting smarter and wiser and not just capitulating to the endless onslaught of Bernaysian propaganda and nihilistic and atheistic tendencies that seem to plague our society these days. But I digress. Among those 41 million Americans are 2.5 million children, which is fantastic. Not really. I'm reminded of Jimmy Dore's segment recently. The SPCA, San Francisco's office, has come under controversy. TrueStream Media did a great video on how utterly despicable it is for an organization that allegedly advocates for animal safety and animal rights and things like that, doesn't seem to care about people. And, you know, while we're on the subject, why would the SPCA, a nonprofit organization, have a San Francisco office in the first place? The cost of space in San, and it's a rhetorical question, of course, but the cost of office space in that area is astronomical. It's just outrageous to imagine that there would be some kind of benefit to having an office in San Francisco other than, you know, for bragging rights, essentially, that could not be garnered somewhere else for a fraction of the cost. So that's an interesting fun fact. So Jimmy Dore talked about the 2.5 million kids that are living in poverty and homeless in this country, but we need to take care of the pets. I thought it was interesting. A number of folks, I've done broadcasts, by the way, and I am the host of Road Warrior Radio here on Republic Broadcasting. But I've done several broadcasts talking about the controversy that surrounds SPCA. They have great slick marketing. Most people are familiar with the Sarah McLachlan style, you know, tear-jerking ads that tug at the heartstrings. But most folks aren't familiar with the controversy of the, mainly dealing with the inner workings of SPCA. And not to pick on SPCA too much, but it's kind of it's indicative of bigger problems that we have in America. And for instance, some estimates indicate that only about a quarter of the donations make it to the local shelter level. There's the issue of astronomical corporate level salaries and compensation packages, and a number of other issues. Like I said, I don't want to pick on the SPCA too much, but it's interesting. You know, the point is, hopefully we're not becoming like that as Americans. The issue most recently, of course, if you're familiar with the story, is that the San Francisco SPCA office started using the robots that at last check, I think, were around $30,000 a piece to patrol the sidewalk outside their office to get rid of homeless people. Because, you know, like Jimmy Dore said in his video about the subject, if they were dogs and cats, stray dogs and cats, you'd offer them shelter. You'd bring them in. But since it's people, you know, we can't do that. So, and that's, we're seeing a trend in that direction in the society. This is an unsettling trend, usually in societies that start to go full Nazi real fast, full fascist, full Nazi. We got to get rid of those dirty, gross people. You know, they're just messing up the view. It's very displeasing. It's not aesthetically pleasing to the eye, so we have to get rid of them. Hopefully we're not doing that in this society. Anyway, if you're interested, for those who might be interested, so what do you do? Because I know some, I know there are a number of people who do care about animals, and that's an issue that's near and dear to some people. HelpPetShelters.com is a place to go. HelpPetShelters.com. And you'll see on the website that they're running national ad campaigns and saying give local, not to the Humane Society of the United States, for these obvious reasons, if you want to help. And so on the HelpPetShelters.com website, that you'll, some of the things you'll see right from the website, it says many people see commercials from the Humane Society of the United States and think their donation will help pets in their local shelter. The Humane Society of the United States does not run a single pet shelter. If you want your donation used to help homeless pets, give to your local shelter directly. And just some of the bullet points in the list of problems here. Deceptive fundraising. HSUS raises millions of dollars from American animal lovers through manipulative advertising, obviously, et cetera. Pension plan. Donors feel wronged. There's just a number of other issues. I'll leave it to the listener to investigate further. One thing I did want to note, and we'll get into national intel here in a second, just one bit of, I don't know, a brief anecdotal aside, I guess. I have focused on the administrative fourth branch of the federal government at times for weeks on end, for months even. About 8 years ago, 7 or 8 years ago, I think I covered that at length for a period of about 3 months. Ralph Winterode is perhaps the premier host on this network on the subject and the ancillary issues, if you will. And so I would direct the listening audience to his broadcast for sure. But it's interesting, you know, from time to time discussion arises, and it's very disturbing and upsetting, perhaps, how woefully uninformed and underinformed we are as Americans. So, with that in mind, uh, just a little kind of reflection. There was I've had kind of a Twitter exchange over the last few days. A lady, I guess, who knows on Twitter, but a lady posted Christmas Eve, "I'm a little tired of calling those that work in government public servants. They're highly paid with pensions not seen in the private sector, unaccountable, and can't be fired. That isn't public service, it's self-service." And I completely agree. A number of folks have said, why don't we have term limits? I mean, term limits should be self-imposed in Congress. There should be no professional politicians or professional bureaucrats, which is kind of redundant. But so to Steph's point, the administrative fourth branch, for those who don't know, I've covered at length the fact that in 1946, Congress formalized the administrative state, the administrative fourth branch of the federal government. Senator Pat McCarran literally said on the Senate floor, "We have created a fourth branch." The way he put it exactly, and you can find this in the congressional record, he said, "We have set up a fourth order in the tripartite plan of government." See, here's the thing. A lot of folks will argue, I suppose I should maybe just continue on before I get off on this, because it will all, I think, make sense if I just continue. So most folks are unaware of where these agencies fall, all of the agencies. What touches the citizen, for example, if you think about the federal government, does the White House come to your door? Does the Supreme Court come to your door? Does Congress? No. So what, as they say, touches the citizen? Which is a question I'll table for the moment. So, Steph's remark, "I'm a little tired of calling those that work in government public servants, quote unquote. They're highly paid with pensions not seen in the private sector, unaccountable, and can't be fired. That isn't public service, it's self-service." And their salaries and pensions are far greater than their constituents in most cases. There's something wrong with this picture, don't you think? Along the way, someone commented, "Really? You actually believe the leadership of the..." And this was regarding the FBI specifically. But Twitter user named Paul Gavin commented, "Really? You actually believe that the leadership of the FBI just had their jobs handed to them?" Ed McCabe, which is, obviously a typo. Ed McCabe... it should be Andrew McCabe, "Did years of field work, received promotions based on merit, but now he's a bad guy because he wouldn't go against his oath, the U.S. Constitution, to declare loyalty to DJT, Donald J. Trump. Sad." And, that's interesting because there are just – it's like a California roll of fallacies. It's an enigma wrapped in a conundrum or something, this soundbite. Anyway, continuing though, the same user replied again and posted, "Funny how people like this tweet but never give a factual statement as to why they think I spout BS." So my reply, and this is antagonistic, admittedly, and this is not good. I need to not do this. I'm not advocating this, but I'm giving you the thread as it happened. So my reply was, "Would you like to talk facts, Paul Gavin? I'm your Huckleberry. First question and answer specifically, under which branch does the FBI fall? Or for that matter, CIA, NSA, DOD, Social Security Administration, IRS, Department of Homeland Security, TSA, the not federal, not reserve, etc. Bonus question, which branch touches the citizen, quote unquote?" And I commend the Twitter user Paul Gavin for replying. He replied directly and specifically, the FBI is in the DOJ, which is, of course, in the executive branch. What's your point? And that's not correct. So I replied as much. And the replies are as following. There are a few. And hopefully this isn't too much of a news flash for the listening audience here. I presume it's not. It's probably by way of review, but bear with me. So my responses are, thank you for answering. Close, not quite. They're all independent administrative agencies, part of quasi-offshoot of the executive. And see, that's the misleading aspect of this discussion. So continuing, I posted the 1946 APA formalized the fourth branch, a quasi-offshoot of the executive. Look what Senate Judiciary Chair Senator McCarran said. And I included a screenshot of the congressional record wherein Senate Judiciary Chair Pat McCarran said on the Senate floor as they were passing the Administrative Procedure Act, Senate Bill 7, McCarran said, we have set up a fourth order in the tripartite plan of government, which was initiated by the founding fathers of our democracy. They set up the executive, the legislative, and the judicial branches, but since that time, we have set up a fourth dimension, if I may so term it, which is now popularly known as administrative in nature. So we have the legislative, the executive, the judicial, and the administrative. And then he goes on to detail exactly how all of the three duly constituted branches work and why there is this presumptive gap that needs to be filled, which there is not. This is a specious argument. But that's what Senator Pat McCarran said. So if that's true and all of these agencies fall into this administrative branch that Senator Pat McCarran is talking about, why does he make the distinction? If all of these agencies are just part of the executive branch, why make the distinction? Kind of a provocative error or oversight on the part of the Senate Judiciary Chair, don't you think? So my reply was, on the Senate floor, McCarran said, we have created a fourth branch order dimension, i.e. separate and distinct from the executive. Curious, don't you think? Next, I mentioned notice. Also, he called the APA a Bill of Rights for those whose affairs are controlled or regulated by agencies. He said, Senate Bill 7 is a Bill of Rights. I'll read you the entire quote. Mr. President, calendar number 758, Senate Bill 7, the purpose of which is to improve the administration of justice by prescribing fair administrative procedure, a completely disingenuous term, by the way. For more on that, see William Willoughby's Principles of Judicial Administration, which is an awful 800-page read or so. Anyway, that's where that malice came from, predominantly. It's kind of the administrator's Bible. But continuing, he said Senate Bill 7, which became the Administrative Procedure Act, is a Bill of Rights for the hundreds of thousands of Americans whose affairs are controlled or regulated in one way or another by agencies of the federal government. It is designed to provide guarantees of due process in administrative procedure, which you don't want, by the way. That's not desirable. You don't want anything to do with administrative procedure. It gets into that branch of so-called law that is inquisitorial, ministerial, and feudal in nature. You are presumed guilty until proven innocent. It's the reason that we have this overarching spy state grid now that wants to peer into every nook and cranny of your life. More on that in a minute. That's where kind of where we're headed. But the Senate Judiciary Chairman, Senator Pat McCarran, literally said the APA is a Bill of Rights, the Administrative Procedure Act. And I have been in court proceedings. We played the audio in past broadcasts. I've heard both of these referred to, the so-called statutory and constitutional, both of which are misnomers. For those who don't know, the Constitution does not grant rights. The Bill of Rights does not grant rights. It enumerates rights that, as the Declaration of Independence points out, we're all endowed with by our Creator. These rights that are inalienable, that are cannot be given away or taken away. They can be abrogated, apparently, by intrigue and other means, unfortunately. So Senator Pat McCarran said, we have created a fourth branch, and the Administrative Procedure Act is a Bill of Rights. As I said, I have been in court proceedings. I have heard a public defender speaking on behalf of someone that I actually knew personally say, and that's there's a backstory, but the public defender said, Your Honor, while she is adamant about preserving her constitutional right to a speedy trial, she is willing to waive her statutory right to a speedy trial. What? Well, again, it's part of that Administrative Procedure Act Bill of Rights. So, continuing on this note, next I mentioned this was not a hyperbolic, but a very literal reference. As I said, I've heard it in court myself or in the magistrate's proceedings. And speaking of the DOJ, even the DOJ knows, and I included a link to justice.gov, which is the congressional proceedings for the Administrative Procedure Act. Even the Justice Department includes a link to it at justice.gov. You can find the administrative procedure hearings at justice.gov. So this is not some conspiracy. Even the Justice Department knows. Post a link to it. I almost wonder if that's hubris. Next, like Morpheus said, you've been living in a dream world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth. The truth is, you're a slave. To blind you from the truth that you're a slave. And I mentioned some suggested reading. The Birth of the Administrative State, Where It Came From, and What It Means for Limited Government by R.J. Pastrito, which is fantastic. He cited Gary Lawson's Rise and Rise of the Administrative State, published in 1994, which is also fantastic. That was published at the Harvard Law Review. So, you know, this is not conspiracy stuff. And speaking of Gary Lawson's piece, The Rise and Rise of the Administrative State, again, published at the Harvard Law Review, volume 107, back in 1994. The way Gary Lawson put it, the post-New Deal administrative state is unconstitutional, and its validation by the legal system amounts to nothing less than a bloodless constitutional revolution. Those are strong words. And that's not a conspiracy blog, that's the Harvard Law Review. And again, that's almost 25 years ago now. So, where are we now in America? Has this bloodless constitutional revolution succeeded? We're about 100 years on or so in this administrative hijinks. Begun perhaps most notably in the Woodrow Wilson administration, But that certainly wasn't the beginning. That was when it kicked into high gear and really caught full sail, you might say, in the FDR era. So, continuing, one of the last pieces that I mentioned was The Third House of Congress versus the Fourth Branch of Government, published in the John Marshall Law Review, another highly venerated law review in the country. That was published back in 1986. Think about that. Over 30 years ago. You know, people haven't heard about this? The Third House versus the Fourth Branch? There's a Third House? There's a Fourth Branch? Yes. The full title of the article is The Third House of Congress versus the Fourth Branch of Government, The Impact of Congressional Committee Staff on Agency Regulatory Decision-Making. One more time, because that's kind of a mouthful. The Third House of Congress. Think about that. The Third House of Congress versus the Fourth Branch of Government. The Impact of Congressional Committee Staff on Agency Regulatory Decision-Making. And so you have those extra constitutional bodies identified in the latter half of the title. And James P. Hill, who authored the piece, is a remarkable piece that everyone should read. Put it this way. This is the way he put it. You know, we talk sometimes, there's this talk about throw the 545 or so out of Congress, the Senate and Congress, throw Capitol Hill out. Well, the problem with that is that you have these professional bureaucrats that flesh things out. Remember Congressman Greg Walden's lament at the height of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge occupation when he said the BLM is abusive. I co-authored a law on behalf of the ranchers and the local people that the BLM then, once the law was passed, in fleshing the law out, the BLM completely flipped the spirit of the law to the BLM's benefit and to the detriment of the local people and the ranchers. Remember Greg Walden's testimony? So to that point, that's exactly what James P. Hill was writing about in the Third House of Congress versus the Fourth Branch of Government, the impact of congressional committee staff on agency regulatory decision making. And in the opening of his article, James P. Hill put it like this: this article presents a simple yet unsettling proposition. Regulatory decision making, among the most intrusive and pervasive aspects of federal activity, is largely the product of two politically unaccountable bureaucracies. See, this is the thing. When we're talking about the FBI or the DOJ, which have come under scrutiny recently for obvious reasons, they're no different than any other agency, the BLM, in the case of Greg Walden's lament, or any other, the FCC, when it comes to the net neutrality discussion, or any other. The problem is, you and I, the citizen, have no what is our where do you find a neck to grab? What is your recourse? What is your power? How do you hold independent agencies and the bureaucratic ticks that infest them accountable? Not that all agency staff are bad, but you understand the point. You know, Lord Acton's axiom kind of comes into full effect, doesn't it? There's no accountability. What good could possibly come from that? You know, we've seen that in the messages that we've witnessed from the FBI officials, for Pete's sake. Stick around, we'll be right back after this short break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. Once again, I am your guest host, Chris Hinckley, sitting in for John Stadmiller. I'm the regular host of Road Warrior Radio here on Republic Broadcasting Network. And you heard it in the break. This ain't no PBS, no NPR. This is not an operation that's underwritten by the MacArthur Foundation, the Knight Foundation, the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, Ford, Carnegie, Rockefeller, not that kind of operation. So listener support is much needed and much appreciated. So thank you for your support. Not an Open Society Foundation's functionary either, apparatchik. Maybe more on George Soros here in a little bit. I've been saying on my broadcast lately, I think of him as the Zek. Maybe I'll explain why in a little bit. If you've seen the first Jack Reacher, maybe you understand why we take what can be taken. Let me finish this point real quick, and we'll go to the phone. So, third house of Congress versus the fourth branch of government. James P. Hill put it this way. This article presents a simple yet unsettling proposition. Regulatory decision-making, among the most intrusive and pervasive aspects of federal activity, or any activity in American life, I would add. And this was 1986. Better or worse today? Rhetorical. Self-explanatory. So this activity is largely the product of two politically unaccountable bureaucracies, unelected congressional committee staff and unelected regulatory agency officials comprise these two politically unaccountable bureaucracies. So what happens? Remember the old Schoolhouse Rock, you know, how a bill becomes law? Well, what happens after a bill becomes law? This is critical. So enter James P. Hill's piece. See, that should have been the follow-up to that Schoolhouse Rock video. So James P. Hill wrote, both of these bureaucracies have developed outside the constitutional framework, extra-constitutional, i.e. unconstitutional. Continuing, modern regulatory decision-making, therefore, is not the result of formal directives or interactions between the regulators and their constitutionally elected masters. Instead, modern regulatory decision-making is the result of only informal negotiations between the unelected congressional committee staff members and the unelected regulatory agency officials. Now, here's the punchline. And by the way, this is exactly what Greg Walden was lamenting in the aforementioned congressional testimony. But here's the punchline. By largely ignoring the significant role that congressional committee staff members play in influencing the process and product of regulatory decision-making, reformers proposing formal changes, i.e. throw Congress out, you know, throw out the House, throw out the entire Senate. Well, what about this? Those who propose formal changes in the rulemaking process risk overlooking the need for simultaneous exploration of informal reforms. I say get rid of the administrative branch. That's just my two cents. Kind of like the UN discussion, which to me is absurd. Listening today to Trish Regan hosting Your World with Cavuto. Trish Regan is annoying to me anyway. But Rebecca Heinrichs was the guest. She's billed as a national security expert, which means what? Who knows? But Rebecca Heinrichs talking about how we should go through the UN budget line item by line item. She made the remark, we shouldn't withdraw on ideological grounds. We should be pragmatic about it, which to me is a very ambiguous, disingenuous turn of phrase, which calls to mind Orwell's aphorism, the great enemy of clear language is insincerity. Because if you look up the definitions of ideological and pragmatic, it sounds very duplicitous. Her misread and misstep on Israel is another, the so-called state of Israel is another fun little nugget that I'll talk about in tomorrow's Road Warrior Radio broadcast, but I digress. On that note, let's go to the phones real quick and grab George in Texas. George, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Happy, merry belated Christmas.
Thanks, George. Feliz Navidad.
You know, the thing is, you just stole my thunder because, you know, they're already saying, like, 2018, we're going to get this big turnover and all that stuff. And my advice to these new people that are wet behind the ears or green, I wouldn't hire any staffers out of Washington. I'll tell you that right now. I bring my own people in. Because I really think that's part of the problem. What's that?
You mean you wouldn't grab a lobbyist and put him in some elected position when he has obvious and direct former so-called or former quote-unquote ties to special interests? That's not what you would do. And then when he's done with his congressional service, send him back to, you know, the firm that he worked for as a lobbyist. And anyway, I'm just being cheeky.
I know. I mean, if I was a freshman congressman, I wouldn't hire anybody out of Washington, D.C. to run my staff.
Well, the problem is the workload supposedly is so overwhelming. They're so inundated that, you know, that's kind of the thing. It's the same as the American worker. You keep people busy so that they don't have time to figure out what's really going on.
Another thing, too, it's like with the president, I can just tell you right now, he is surrounded by the wrong people. And the biggest mistake he ever did was bringing in Rice Priebus and Governor Mike Pence. You know, because I really think Mike Pence, I think he's just stabbing him in the back every chance he gets. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's behind his deep state coup. General Mattis, I think he wasn't fired by Obama or John Kelly. He retired, and the only really hardcore patriot was General Mike Flynn. And when the most littlest thing, they buffaloed him out. You know, then he's just surrounded by the wrong people. Because I'm wondering, why are not the Hammonds or the Bundys pardoned? Why is there no? Why is the Justice Department going out to Chicago and arresting these traitors trying to get the United Nations in? You know, I don't hear Trump talking about Donald Trump talking about no UN troops in Chicago unless they come through me. You know, I don't hear any of that, you know, because he's surrounded by the wrong people, because they're only giving them information they want him to hear. Nothing, because I just heard about Trump pardoning a Jewish criminal. I forget his name and what he was incarcerated for, but, you know, I mean, it just, you know, it's just like he's just surrounding himself with the wrong people.
Well, you know, then there are some of us who would speculate that maybe, you know, we would call them the wrong people, but then maybe others would say they're, you know, exactly. I mean, he surrounded himself with establishment types, quite frankly, more and more so. And it's interesting how the more he goes on, his administration starts in controversy, supposedly. I think it's all WWF theater. And I mean WWF. In other words, like old school, bad 1980s wrestling, professional wrestling theater. Because that was more honest in its showmanship, I think. Now, you know, they're trying too hard. But his administration starts in controversy. And now even, you know, most of the mainstream networks are anytime they discuss him or air any footage, they use that apprentice style photograph of him. They used to show him looking very dopey and goofy and, you know, just the most inopportune moments, the least photogenic moments. Now everybody's using that apprentice looking photo. So the more establishment his administration becomes, and I don't think can become more establishment. The folks that you're mentioning, I call the CMP crowd, the Council for National Policy crowd, which is the hardcore Zionist supporting group, a warmongering contingent, which is very unfortunate.
I just hope when Trump made that the choice to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, yet there will be strings attached, like no more further Jewish settlements or pull out of the West Bank, you know, type of thing. But I don't really think there's those strings attached, you know, to that.
Yeah, I believe that's all just part of further fomenting and heightening the controversy that Pike wrote about in his letter to Mazzini. The Zionists, pitting the Zionists against the political Islamists, or the, you know, political Zionism or Zionism against political Islam. And Zionism is not Judaism, and political Islam is not Islam. You know, Wahhabism, Salafism, Deobandism, that's not Islam. To say a Wahhabist or a Wahhabi Salafi ideologue is a Muslim is kind of like saying a guy who runs around in a white sheet at night is a Christian. So, you know, pitting those forces against one another, which, by the way, are represented most notably in this thing, the so-called State of Israel, which is not the biblical Israel, and Saudi Arabia, which is illegitimate too. Both are interlopers in the region.
I know in the Bible, Israel lost that territory from the Nile to the Euphrates for their immorality and, you know, for them falling from grace.
Right, but specifically in the Bible, what is Israel? What is the nation of Israel? It's the people of whose descendants? Jacob had his name changed to Israel. His descendants, the 12 tribes, right?
Yes.
So where is the reference in this state of Israel to any of that history? There is none.
Well, we are the descendants of the Israelites. Look at the migration patterns.
No. If you want to go to the, it depends on how you want to play this. You know, if we're talking specifically biological descendants of Jacob, that's one thing. There is no tie to that. Or if you want to talk, you know, who's who in the zoo that Paul outlines in, you know, who's the New Testament Jew, so to speak, in the book of Romans, chapter 2 and chapter 9 specifically. You know, the children of the promise. That's a different discussion. Again, there's no correlation there either. What you find, if you go back in history, is that Zionists at the first Zionist Congress in 1897, led by guys like Theodore Herzl, were plotting and scheming to architect wars, which, by the way, Carol Quigley wrote about in the Anglo-American Establishment. It's the Amazon book description, even. The way Amazon puts it, Quigley exposes the secret societies. What? Amazon has this? Yeah. Quigley exposes the secret societies established in London in 1891 by Cecil Rhodes. Quigley explains how these men worked in union to begin their society to control the world. Whoa. Secret societies, control the world, 1891. He explains how all the wars from that time were deliberately created to control the economies of all the nations. Huh. And then shortly thereafter, we get World War I, for example, and there is, I don't want to get into the specifics now, maybe, I guess if somebody wanted to, you know, ask or whatever, but there's evidence, there's proof that the interests that were at work in the Rhodes-Milner roundtables were the same interests at work in the Zionist Congress, were the same interests at work in carving up the region of the Middle East as a result of World War I. They were doing it before the end of the world of World War I. The Sykes-Picot Agreement is proof of that. The Balfour Declaration is proof of that. And then you have the British Mandate in 1920, and then you have, you know, so-called Israel appears on the map out of nowhere. But then there's the Baron Edmund de Rothschild, $50 million land purchase around the turn of the 20th century. There's all kinds of intrigue going on. And there were other backroom deals at work, too, that don't get discussed. There were people working to carve up that area. And all of that doesn't even include the backstory of Wahhabism, speaking of the Saudi Wahhabi alliance that dates back to the founding of the American Republic. And folks don't realize that the Barbary pirates were Wahhabi pirates, the same kind of pirates that come out of Saudi Arabia now, by the way. And that ideology, Wahhabism, Salafism, which some refer to as Wahhabism on tour, is what was used to fracture, to balkanize the Ottoman Empire, which was the precursor to all of the stuff that I just mentioned. And it's interesting to note, by the way, one of my favorite references when it comes to all of this discussion is the Balfour Declaration, which says, in part, I'll just read it. His Majesty's government view with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people. And we'll use their, and this was 1917, of course, and we'll use their best endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this object. It being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine. And there's more, but I'm going to stop there. It being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine. So my question simply, 100 years later, is has that statement been honored? Clearly it has not. And it's so foolish a notion, it's absurd to think that, in simple terms, you know, I could walk into your house and say, hey, you know, my ancestors, they have this document that says that I claim, and I'm not getting into the splitting of hairs. I'm just saying, if we just look at it at face value, what would happen if someone showed up and said, hey, you know, I have this document. My ancestors said that I have claim to half of your house. And so we're just going to live in this other house. And then all of a sudden, over time, the interlopers started acting like you are the invaders. Wouldn't that cause controversy? I think it, you know, kind of goes without saying. And by the way, who was Dear Lord Rothschild in the Balfour Declaration? But I digress. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you one from Amazon.com. I just wanted you to know I saw my doctor and I laughed because he said, I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it. I have been taking Extendivite. I had borderline high blood pressure, heart flutter, high cholesterol. I changed my diet and included Extendivite with an amazing turnaround for the better. A few months later, I had a doctor's appointment and took a stress test. I passed. No heart flutter. Blood pressure was perfect. My doctor even took me off my medicine. I thank you truly from the bottom of my heart. This stuff works, and I'm so grateful for Extendivite. Thank you, Justin G. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Welcome back. Final segment of the National Intel Report this Tuesday, December 26th. First hour, that is. Final segment of the first hour of the National Intel Report. This Tuesday, December 26th. We're on the phone. You know, this hopefully this all makes sense, because in a national intel report context, even though we're talking kind of geopolitics and that kind of stuff, it's all the same agenda. It's the same agenda that's was at work before the first Zionist Congress met in 1897 and is still at work today. I think that Pike's ostensibly apocryphal letter to Mazzini back in 1871 is very telling, pitting the forces of Zionism against political Islam. And people will say, but those terms weren't, you know, Zionism wasn't really a thing then. Well, sure, all the isms sort of cropped up out of that era, didn't they? You know, including the Communist Manifesto and Workers of the World Unite and all of these ideas, the Henri de Saint-Simons and Robert Owens, and, you know, all of these ideas were formalized and fused sort of together. Pardon?
Yeah, I was just talking to my wife. Sorry about that.
That's all right. You know, it's all the same.
Anyway,
it's all the same agenda. Today, same efforts to try to collide Zionism against political Islam, draw the whole world into it. Doesn't matter who you're listening to. Seems like this question of the state of Israel is on the lips of every newscaster on the 6 o'clock news. Certainly,
well,
the major
say Jerusalem will be a burdensome stone, a trembling cup.
Yeah, and I think the devil has kind of wired up a system to use intrigue and deception to basically almost sort of, you know, use those passages against the naive, the unwitting, the unknowledgeable, so to speak. We're supposed to get wisdom and knowledge. They're more valuable than riches and anything. We're supposed to say wisdom, you're my sister, Proverbs chapter 7, anyway.
I'd like to know, who came up with the term Palestine and Palestinian?
That's probably a good word study.
I think that was a term made up by the British Empire when they occupied Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I lost this woman, because I sit there trying to challenge her, because she's sitting there saying, Jerusalem is the capital of the Palestinians. I'm like, how can you prove that? You know, I just challenge her. She just cut me off as a friend. I was just challenging her, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, what historical factual basis do you have? But this is the same woman who's about to allow a bunch of Somali refugees on her ranch. And I just say, good luck with that. You might be raped. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, that's probably a little more graphic than we need to get. But yeah, we'll touch on that when we come back. Folks, stick around. Second hour of the National Intel Report coming up right after this break.
We must take America back. We must take America back.
Hey, folks. CBD is the home run hitter for health right now. Why, you ask? Because of what it does for the body. Unfortunately, I can't tell you all about the benefit. You know, there's reasons. Do your due diligence and log on to ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Ancient Life Oil uses organic ingredients and is blended in coconut oil for some of the best benefits. Legal in 50 states and non-psychoactive. Log on to ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Do you worry a lot? Whether you're a college student, busy professional, parent, or grandparent, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in 1 to 2 weeks. Call 1-800-758-8746 or calmandclever.com.
This is RBN. The Republic Broadcasting Network.